There we go. The problem is if you don't record it, it's not recorded. And if you want it, it's gone. So, well, let's start with you, Aaron. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
I'm currently living in the greater Tampa Bay area of Florida. By trade, I'm a psychotherapist, a licensed mental health counselor. And for I guess the past 4 years now, I've been doing counseling by video only, so I no longer have an office. It's funny to be, because usually I'm on your end of things. Tell me about yourself. Like, what brings you here? What brings you to this little world? It's very weird to be like, oh man, this is what it feels like to be one of my clients. So this is good. I mean, this like really allows me to really kind of get things from their perspective now.
That whole video counseling thing, which of course sort of arose in COVID. Before then, it was like, no, you got to be in person. And then suddenly after COVID, most of the people I know, especially if they have limited means and insurance is paying, it's video. And that's.
Yeah, it's really strange. I started doing video only counseling, I guess about a year before COVID, and it was all tech. It was all like tech
Oh.
employees, tech executives and things. They were the only ones that seemed to be interested in video. And then COVID comes along and suddenly I'm like swamped with like client. There were days where I was working 6 days a week during COVID, and it was really interesting just to see like this vast array of clients, no longer just educated people within the
Yeah.
tech industry. Now I have like this whole spectrum of people coming in. But I find it's so much easier for me to get information out of people because they feel comfortable. They're in their own setting. I had a great office. So for years I was based out of the Northern Virginia, basically the suburbs of DC. And that was where my office was located. And it was a great office, but I could tell people had a hard time, coming into my environment because it's an alien environment. It's a foreign environment. And so it took a lot longer for them to get comfortable with me and to really form that therapeutic alliance that we needed in order to work from. Whereas with video counseling now, like oftentimes the first session, people, describe like very personal things, very difficult things, and feel comfortable going into detail.
I've had exactly that experience in terms of pastoral ministry because, of course, I never did pastoral ministry over a Zoom call. I mean, you go to somebody's house or they come to your office or you meet in a coffee shop. I mean, that's where you would do these things. And then before COVID, even with just talking to people that had been watching my videos, I was amazed how quickly they sort of got down to business. I had a pastoral mentor of mine when I was in college and seminary. He always had a clock behind the chair. Someone would come into his office, they'd sit there, he'd sit there. I always had a clock. He said they never get to anything until 10 minutes before the appointment is done. And
Yeah, I
so
know that experience.
he had all sorts of tricks and stuff to try and get him because of course 10 minutes before the appointment is done and then next time they come in, maybe we'll get into it a little sooner, but it's just like, no, you're exactly right. I'd never put that together in terms of space and location, but it makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. Well, anyway, I got distracted. So, okay, so you're a psychotherapist, and well, tell me about the home you grew up in. Not that you've ever thought about this before.
I grew up in a really small town in Vermont, and when it's like a town of like 1500 people, maybe. So I'm 49. I'll be 50 in 6 months. So I grew up pretty much in the 80s. That's like what I really remember is the 1980s. A little bit of like the end of the 70s, but definitely a lot more memories from the 80s. And so in northern Vermont, you basically have two ethnic groups. You're either Irish American or you're French Canadian American, and that's basically it. You're like one of those two ethnic enclaves, and that's where you're coming from. And so I grew up in a French Canadian enclave. My grandparents came to the U.S. Out of Montreal, and I have a lot of fond memories of my father taking us into Montreal and visiting some of his aunts. They would be, I guess, my great aunts. They were nuns in Montreal, and he had some cousins that were also priests as well. And so, meeting them and things like that, and going to Latin Mass at Notre Dame. And it's funny. I know you were talking about what'd you say the other day? We're all Protestants now, and that really stuck with me, because going to Mass in Montreal versus going to Mass in my little town in Vermont, it's like this church does not look like a Catholic. It looks more like a Protestant church. There's very few beautiful statuary or other artwork inside. You have like a the only thing that would denote it that it's a Catholic church is the crucifix. But if you were to take out the crucifix, I mean, it would probably just look like, I don't know, like a Methodist church or something. But that being said, it was a very strong French Canadian Catholic church that I grew up in. You sang the hymns in French. That was pretty amazing.
Did you know what you were singing? Was there enough French that you picked up along the way that? Because
I'm so
it's a
much.
different than being in Quebec, where there's this, everywhere else in Canada, well, y'all have to learn French, but in Quebec, you really have to know it because we're gonna talk it. And if you don't, I mean, it's.
I did when I was younger, but after my grandparents passed, because their English wasn't great, so I had to use French to communicate with them. I got out of practice and forgot a lot. I'm still very good at reading it. Like if you put like a newspaper in front of me, I can like translate, but in terms of like auditory and like verbal comprehension, still kind of squirrely. Every once in a while I'll watch like a French movie, and I can pick up bits and pieces here and there, but I'm just like so rusty that I would not be very good in terms of being a translator. But I was part of that church. I was an altar boy, I think, when I was up from 11 to 12. That was
Did you go to
basically
public
the
school?
So initially, I went to public school all the way up into eighth grade, and then once I got to high school, the public high school in the area where I'm from, I mean, it's basically it was designed for farmers, the kids of farmers. And so my parents were very blue collar, but they wanted my sister and I to go to college and have like a more white collar profession. So, as soon as high school came, they said, you're going to Catholic school, you're going, the big city, which is like Burlington, which is like 75,000 people. So they sent me into to put the Catholic high school in the city. And I went there. I mean, I don't know if it still is, but it was very rigorous back then. Like I had to learn Latin. 30 years later, I still remember being in Latin class with Sister Margaret Mary and having to translate passages of the Summa Theologica by St. Thomas Aquinas. I think about that now. I was like, man, that was in graduate school, they weren't that heavy ones. I think it was a Dominican run school. I think it was the Dominicans that ran at least the religious programs. at the height.
How was religion for you as a teenager? Was it something you were interested in, something devoted to, something you chafed against?
Oh, now we're getting into the meat of things.
Of course, that's what we're here for. Why waste time?
yeah, so essentially I think of my spiritual religious life pre-divorce and post-divorce, because my parents divorced when I was 13, and like my entire world like just was obliterated at that point. Everything completely changed. So my mother wasn't raised Catholic. My mother converted to become a Catholic when she married my father. Well, basically my father got my mother pregnant, and my father's father was like, yeah, you're gonna marry this girl or you're gonna be ostracized from the family. She literally, like a shotgun wedding essentially, without the shotgun, but it was, the threat was implied. And so my parents got married, and they had a very difficult relationship. They just were not compatible with one another. And my father had a lot of personal issues as well. So my mother really tried to stick it out. I mean, she stuck it out for like 18 years. But finally my father, his drinking was getting out of control. He was starting to become violent, and my mother said, this is it. I've had enough. And so they get divorced, and like the divorce itself like didn't really, I wasn't like I wasn't that sad about like the two of them splitting, because their relationship was just so horrible that it was like, finally you two decided you can't live under the same roof. But what was really hard on me was that my father's family, just being very strict, French Canadian Catholic, they kind of just turned on my mother, and they ostracized her from the family, and that kind of included us as well. And so no longer would we go to, every year, like they would have huge like Christmas celebrations. My dad had 10 brothers and sisters, so there were 11 of them in the family. And so I have like 100 cousins on that side of the family. And so they would have these huge elaborate holiday celebrations. And my sister and I were just like no longer invited to these celebrations. And on top of that, my poor mother, so the church that I went to, the Catholic church that I went to, the priest wasn't a bad man, but he was a very weak leader, in that he didn't really run the church. There were a group of like literal church ladies who basically ran the church, and they didn't like my mother being a divorced woman. And also you have to understand that like back then, back in those days, my mother was a very good looking woman when she was younger. She looked almost exactly like Princess Diana. Like if you can picture Princess Diana, like that's what my mother looked like back in the 1980s. So she's this attractive woman who's now divorced. And my mother some of the men in the church like hitting on her after my parents' divorce. And so these church ladies confronted my mother after my confirmation. I think I was in eighth grade at the time, and they basically told her that like, you're not welcome here anymore. And my mother, rightly so, like lost it, and I just remember like after confirmation, being in my little confirmation outfit, my mother telling me to like go to the car, go wait for me in the car, and just hearing like her just like yelling at the church ladies and the priest, the father. And she gets in the car and just looks at me and is like, you're not going to that church anymore. And I'm like, well,
Confirmation done.
yeah,
Out.
exactly.
So
You can make up your own mind from now
did you
on.
stop going to church entirely, or did you go to a different Catholic church, or did you go to a Protestant church?
No, so Every 2 weeks I would go, I would spend the weekend with my father.
Oh, yeah.
And he was still going to church. He was living in a different town. And my father was very much, I don't know. I go back and forth on this. I wish I'd had the chance to ask him before he died, but I feel like he was really an atheist. And he went to church just because like that was what was expected of him.
Sure.
He came from, a
Yeah.
large, traditional family where you had all sorts of family members going into the taking up the clerical collar. So I think he just did it what was expected. Because the reason why I say this is because we literally went to this church that was basically designed for tourists. And so there wasn't really much of a community in this particular church, and it was known as the priest there had the shortest like homily out of like all the other churches in the area. And so that's the reason why my father would go there was because he's like, oh yeah,
Efficiency.
yeah, 40 minutes, we're in and out, and it's we're good to go. And so yeah, I would go to that church with him, but would just not get like anything out of it whatsoever. And it's not like I would be able to ask like deep theological questions with my
Yeah.
father. Like, it was
Yeah.
just not there. So yeah, there was once that happened, it's like it's like all the spiritual binds that I had inside of me were just like cut. And I just really felt like, well, if this is what it means to be, Catholic, then why follow this path? Like these people seem ridiculous. I don't see like a whole lot of, saintly behavior among like this particular group. All I see is a lot of drama and just a lot of just very damaged people. And yeah, I at that point I really did, turn away from the church. And I don't think I ever really like turned away from God at all because I continued to search, and I remember getting in a debate in my religion class with oh, God bless him, Brother Adrian. I wish he was still alive because I would go and apologize to him. He would always talk about like how impossible it was for those of us to convert to something else. And I remember debating with him like, well, I was at the time I'd started reading his name is it DT Suzuki, the guy who was very famous for writing a lot of Buddhism texts. I started reading a bunch of Zen Buddhism and couldn't understand like half of it, but I don't know, I guess I was just trying to be edgy at the time or something. But I would bring like these Buddhist texts to like study to my study period and sit there and read them. And so I was debating Brother Adrian about, well, what if I want to become a Buddhist? I think I'm going to convert to Buddhism. And he's like, Aaron, you're like a bag of tea. You've been steeped in, French Canadian Catholicism your entire life. You can't just become a Buddhist. And he had some other points he was making, but I just wasn't listening. I'm like, oh yeah, well, I'm going to become a Buddhist and, I'm going to show you and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't become a Buddhist, but I was just in such a rebellious phase at that point in my life. And none of the kids that I went to high school with didn't seem particularly, they were also much like my father. They're just kind of going through the motions. Yeah, we go to mass, we take the Eucharist, but then on the weekends we party, smoke weed, drink, have sex. Like it's not, it's nothing that's it's just part of what we have to do in order to get through school. So yeah, I mean, really at that point, I would occasionally pick up like a book on just kind of general spirituality here or there, but really didn't do any kind of deep soul searching at all. In fact, if anything, by the time I got into college in my 20s, I was just living as a hedonist. I mean, that was probably my main spirituality at that point in my life, was just being a hedonism and just experiencing as much pleasure, physical pleasure, as I possibly could. But it's really funny because, my mother was also in the same boat, in that she was kind of done with Catholicism because of what happened with the church. And so she decided she was going to look into some Protestant churches. That did not go well, because the thing about my mother is that she's basically a folk Catholic. And what I mean by that is that she has a strong devotion to Mary. And I never really asked her about it, but I'm pretty sure the reason was because my mother had actually lost her firstborn child, my brother, Christopher. He had died from SIDS when he was a baby.
This is the child that they married for.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Wow. that'll keep a therapist busy for a while.
Yeah.
But, and then, of course, you've got a devotion to Mary. You're going to New England Protestant churches. It's like,
yeah. Well, I think because my mom losing her firstborn son just was able to identify with
absolutely
Mary so
yeah.
much.
Yeah.
And
that's
the only reason I can come up with why she had like such an intense devotion to her. But yeah, the Protestant pastors apparently weren't too fond of that. In fact, one of them kicked her out of a Bible study group because he thought she was a goddess worshiper. Basically accused her of being a goddess worshiper.
Oh, and, Lord have mercy.
Yeah, so she tried a couple of different Protestant churches, but none of them kind of stuck. So she just kind of, I don't know, I guess kind of became her own thing.
Yeah.
And just went from there.
Yeah. Wow. So when did you decide to get into, did you get into psychology to become a psychotherapist, or were you just interested in psychology first?
None, actually. I mean, my undergraduate is, I have an undergraduate degree in psychology, but I didn't go to graduate school, immediately. Mm. After I graduated from college, I actually ended up becoming a police officer.
Oh,
and did that for several years, throughout
in a big
my
city
20s.
Or a small town?
No, a small town.
Okay.
And, in my late 20s, I guess. Yeah. Because of some things that had happened at work, started developing some pretty severe PTSD. But I didn't know it at the time. I just started having these panic attacks out of nowhere, and I didn't understand why I was having panic attacks. And so I found this really great therapist. The guy had been former Vietnam vet, had been an outlaw biker, had scars on his face from getting into knife fights in bars, and was just a really great, ended up being a little bit of a clinical mentor for me for a while after graduate school. But so I found him and started going into counseling, and just had a really good experience, really positive experience with him. And then I started asking questions about, like, well, how did you get into this? Like, why did you decide to do this? And so he went into his story and told me a lot about that. So I was like, I think I might apply for graduate school and you know, kind of do a similar path. And but at that point, though, I was in the D.C. area. And so I went to graduate school in Arlington, Virginia. So that's where I started that path. ironically at a Catholic university, but I mean they pretty much were not very Catholic by that point. In fact, I remember being in graduate school and like the most one of the most shocking things was that the university had just elected like their first secular president. And one of the first things he did is he had all of the crucifixes taken out of the classrooms. And there were a lot of people who were like shocked and very angry about that.
Wow. So what was it? What was it like getting into this profession for you? Did you find it life-giving? Getting into starting to do therapy with people.
Well, it was. I found it life-giving. I also found it. I just found it very interesting. Like it was just endlessly fascinating. Like I never got bored. Like that was kind of one of the things that I always found interesting about this profession. Other jobs I had worked, I'd go through periods where I'm like, ah, I'm just not into this anymore. I don't know if I want to do this anymore. I've never had that thought in counseling whatsoever. It keeps me endlessly fascinated with the human condition and human beings and how people react to different things. I mean, one of the reasons why I started enjoying your channel so much was early on when you would have the pot smokers outside your office. Like that was basically my first job out of graduate school was working at a community mental health center, and my office was right outside the main entrance of this human services office building. So you'd have homeless people coming in and out all day long. Some of them would try to camp like right outside my office. I have to go outside, I have to kick them out. I was like, oh wow, I recognize that.
I have this fence now, so it's different. I don't know if it's a good thing or not, but it's I don't know, the way homelessness is going in Sacramento, I don't know if I could keep ahead of the other. But wow. So how did you find me? Jordan Peterson? Are you watching Peterson?
No, actually, I had a lot of clients that kept on asking me, do you know Jordan Peterson? Have you ever, read any of his books? I did check out some of his videos, but that's not how I came through you through the Jonathan Peugeot pipeline, Symbolic World pipeline, because I think I was just watching, I think I was watching a bunch of videos on just like Jungian symbols or something. And so, the holy algorithm was like, oh, well, if you like this, then, maybe you'll like these videos. And so I started watching the symbolic world and just being very interested in that. And then of course, like you popped in there and I'm like, oh, what is this guy? And so I watched a couple of your videos and I think where you hooked me in is, whatever video that you had early on that where you said that the problem with the Protestants is they never stop protesting, and I'm like, wow, that's spicy. And so yeah, you just it's funny how like you just became part of my morning routine. I would just for whatever reason, I guess like your videos tended to come out in the mornings on the East Coast. And so I would, watch like one of your videos while just preparing my breakfast, setting up my coffee. Because usually my first client isn't until like 10, 11 a.m. So I have a lot of time in the morning. So yeah, you just became part of my routine. But I felt like I have more of a parasocial relationship with you versus like some of the other podcasts I listen to, like Peugeot, like. A lot of the other podcasters, I don't feel like I know anything about their lives. Like you're the only one that really talks about like your personal life. And the other podcasters I listen to, I don't know anything about their personal. So it's more like watching, I don't know, a documentary or like a news program or something like that. Whereas with you, it's a lot more personal.
So, what do you want to talk about? Because now I got a sense of you. So what happened with the religion thing? Are you, I mean, you're watching Peugeot, so did you start thinking, having second thoughts about leaving religion, or is this something that's sort of out there, or what's up with that?
Well, I literally followed your advice, Paul. I just went to church. Oh,
did you go to a Catholic church?
Not initially. Initially, I mean, down where I'm at, there's like basically every flavor of like Protestantism. Oh, yeah. I mean, you've got, because you have a lot of East Europeans that came here for the fruit industry back in the 60s, you have basically every Orthodox Christian church you can imagine. I mean, you've got Greek Orthodox, Russian Orthodox, Serbian Orthodox, Romanian Orthodox. Whatever you're interested in down here, there's probably a church for it. As well as I live like right near, you know, the corporate headquarters of Scientology. So if I want to go in that direction, very easily do that as well. So, when I first moved down here, I was dating a woman who, she was a, she was basically an evangelical convert. She grew up in a secular household. She was from Great Britain originally, but grew up in a secular household. You know, she converted to Big Eva and started going to a mega church. And so she tried to make me go to her mega church. I was like, I'll give it a try. But man, you know, I walk in there and they've got like a coffee bar. And then, you know, once they, you know, break out like the rock music, I'm like, I can't do this. It's just, I just started going back to Catholic Mass. And I'll be honest with you, it didn't really do much for me at first. But there's also just so many, because you have so many snowbirds who come down in my area, there's a lot of Catholic churches, and they're all very different. Some of them cater more to the Latin American community. You know, some are clearly geared towards the retirees. So each church is very different. But recently, I found a church where the lead pastor is Nigerian, and I was able to have a coffee with him at one point. And he just talked about his experiences growing up in Nigeria, where like, if you're Christian, like you have to be serious about it because, you know, you have Muslim fanatics that are going to try to blow up your church or shoot your congregants. And so just hearing about his experiences was just really amazing. I can't remember if it was you or Jonathan Peugeot. One of you guys talked about how more and more you're getting, it used to be that, you know, the Europeans went to Africa to evangelize the Africans, and now the Africans are coming into the United States to evangelize.
Yep, that's happening all over. Yep, we've got a Nigerian Anglican church here, and there's a white guy. He's been on the Freddie and Paul show, and he's going to get baptized in the Anglican church next month. And I'm afraid we're kind of pulling him in though, because we serve donuts and they don't, and he likes donuts. So I think. I don't want to get on bad terms with my Nigerian Anglican priest. So,
yeah, they're very passionate.
Yeah,
And so he's a very good evangelist. Normally, I tend to tune out during the homily, but I enjoy listening to his homily.
Good.
I've been going to that church for a little while now. So that's kind of where I'm at. But I think it's really more about, the older that I get, I find it's important for me to connect with my ancestors.
Yeah.
And that pull gets stronger and stronger the older that I get.
You're not a Buddhist. You're not a Buddhist.
I tried. I really tried in my 30s. I went to a couple of sanghas and joined a couple of Buddhist groups. But then I was married for 10 years and I got divorced when I was about 40. And after my divorce, I took a long trip to Southeast Asia and met like real Buddhists. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, like you guys aren't like the American Buddhists.
Like the American Buddhists.
Yeah, they don't practice the corporate Buddhism in places like Thailand. They're pretty militant. So I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, I always knew in my heart that it didn't matter, like, if I tried to practice the Eightfold Path or any of that, that I was never going to feel like a Buddhist. It was just, Brother Adrian was right. He was right the entire time. And I should have listened to him, but I was young and stupid.
Well, we don't listen when we're young. We don't know enough to, we don't know enough to recognize wisdom when it's spoken to us.
Right.
Well, what did you want to talk about? I mean, you've satisfied my curiosity about your story. Is there anything in particular you wanted to bring up or talk about?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you even have an answer for this, but lately I've been getting a lot of young male clients. And when I say young, like 21, 22, 23, you know, the Zoomers, Generation Z.
Yeah.
These young males, they all seem to have the same story, and it breaks my heart. It's so difficult for me to hear. You know, so many of them are just, they're almost like shut-ins in that I'll ask them the same question, like, well, you know, like you, like, tell me about yourself. What do you like doing? Like, what kind of activities, what kind of hobbies are you engaged in? They're like, oh, I play video games at home. You know, I live with my, you know, my parents. And it's like, okay, well, so you don't have any friends? No, I have friends. Okay, well, like, other than video games, like, what do you and your friends do? Well, you know, we'll go out like maybe twice a month, you know, to do something. And I'm like, so, you know, you're just sitting at home, like, you know, the entire time just playing video games. And it's such an alien experience from how I grew up. And when I was in my 20s, I'm an introvert. Like, I am not an extrovert, but I was willing to go out to the clubs or to, you know, cause I knew that's where the girls were. So like, you know, I pushed myself out of my comfort bubble in order to, you know, seek the female race.
Right.
But I asked these young guys, like, what about girls? What about, you know, young women? Well, I talked to some girls online and yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess what my question to you is, like, do you see anything within the greater Christian world on, like, how to deal with this? I mean, it's just, the reason why I asked is because I was reading some articles the other day about muscular Christianity back in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And I remember when I was in my early 20s, I worked out at an old YMCA. And this YMCA had been a YMCA for like over 100 years in this building. It was a very old building. And I remember the basketball court had an area where it looked like at one point a boxing ring had been set up, because you could tell like where the posts had been taken out. And so I talked to at one point I was talking to the director of this YMCA. I'm like, did you guys have like a boxing ring in here at one point? He's like, oh yeah, they had a boxing ring, you know, in there for years. And it was like, you know, it was a huge Saturday night event. You know, all the young men would come and they would either fight or they would watch, you know, the boxing. And, you know, there was probably some gambling going on as well, but it was a huge event. It was a big draw. And I was like, well, like, why'd you guys take it out? Like, what happened to it? He's like, well, back in the 70s, they were afraid of, you know, liability issues. You know, somebody gets hurt and sues the Y. So, you know, we took out the boxing ring. And, you know, of course, the young male, you know, population after that, like, probably shrank. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess, like, does anybody have, like, an answer to that question in terms of, like, How do we bring in these young men who are clearly not getting anything from our current society? Our current society is just, you know, garbage, essentially. It's just being fed into them. And do any of the Christian denominations, any of the churches have any kind of answer in that area.
Well, I would imagine porn would be an issue. That would be the sort of the top of my list. If you have young males who are staying home and in front of screens all the time, they might not, that might not be the first thing that comes out of their mouth. But as in your case with your story, what traditionally has driven men out of their homes is the search for women. And porn is this drug that basically, you know, if you want to sort of emasculate a, you know, half of your population, porn pretty effectively does it. And so that would be, and so I think at least if young men are going to church and being raised in the church, whether or not they're doing porn, if they are doing porn, that at least they know it's an issue. Whereas I suspect further out in the rest of the culture, it's a given. And so that's not even a thing that's going to be addressed. And then following that is obviously computer games. And I think thick, strong church communities have at least a shot at sending the men out to do things. And at least even poorer communities and ethnic communities have more of a shot because there's not the financial buffer that will allow a young male to freeload. And so then it's going to be pressure to go out and get work and bring in income and do something. And all of that too is going to be a useful thing. Now, my youngest son is 23, and he is by no means, he doesn't spend hardly any time playing computer games. He doesn't spend a lot of time watching TV. He spends a lot of his time with friends. And so almost pretty much every night he'll go out and he'll do things with friends. And he likes building stuff and working on stuff. And he's currently looking for, he just graduated from college, looking for more of a full-time job. And so I'm fortunate in that I'm not staring that in the face. With one of my sons, he tended to spend a lot more time with computers and computer games. And when he graduated from college, my wife and I put a lot more pressure on him that he was not, we knew that if we didn't one way or another keep the pressure on him in terms of bringing in income, okay, you can move back home, but you're going to pay me rent, and you're going to pay insurance on that car, and you're going to start paying for that car. And, you know, I very quickly put the screws on him for money so that he would get out there and work. And eventually he did in fact get a job, and he's engaged right now and that's doing well. So I haven't had a lot of problem with that with my sons, but I do see it. And I think it is a big problem. Interestingly enough, I think, Jordan Peterson obviously had a big impact on this population, at least some of them. And then it was interesting that when my local meetup here, one of the things that they wanted to start was a Discord server. And I had never heard of Discord. I had no idea what it was. But of course, it was video game adjacent, in that that's where video gamers could meet and talk to each other. And so part of what we did with Estuary and with the Discord server, which is sort of a half step to that, is again helping guys discover that real people are way more interesting than computer games, and hopefully that real women they're way more complex, but also more rewarding in the long term, more meaningful than porn. So that's not something that I necessarily, also partly because of my congregation. Many of the people in my congregation, their children are my age. So they're dealing with other issues. So I am by no means tremendously experienced with the younger element. It's also interesting that my channel, people don't really start picking up on my channel until age 25 or 26 generally, which is super interesting. So it's like they stagnate, and then at least something comes in and they realize they need a lift. They hit a wall and they have to go beyond. So I know that there are people my age who have sons in that age group. And I remember one friend of mine, this one son he had wasn't, his other sons had pretty much taken off okay, but this one was sort of stuck in what you just described. And then he started hearing Jordan Peterson coming out of his room. So he knew he was watching Jordan Peterson. And then he heard my voice. And so he thought, well, maybe something. I don't know. I don't know if he took off, but what you described is, I think, going to be a very serious thing. And unlike women can get stuck in that too, but I don't think like the guys. And I sometimes guys need a provocation to break out of something like that. And I'm more afraid of a situation where you've got a young man in a house with a single mother. Because I think in a situation like this, often it would probably be the father that would look at that young man and say, "No, we're not having this." And I fear, let's say, a divorced mom might coddle instead of figure out a way to get the kid out into the world. But I don't have any answers, but that's just off the top of my head.
I just wish there was. It would be nice if the churches could do, like have another revolution like what the YMCA did back in the 1800s, where you have a place where kids, men, young men especially, can get involved in athletics, sports. They can be around each other in a healthy manner. They can compete.
That happens in the black community more. And I think part of what provoked it and has traditionally provoked it was young men that are idle are big trouble. They get into problems with the law, et cetera, and that then mobilizes the community. I've seen that in the black community, and where gangs are an issue, because the problem is gangs then. But what you're describing is affluent capture by porn, video games, and probably pot and alcohol that sort of become this pen that's going to sap away years of their life. And again, by the time people sort of find me, they've maybe been in it a few years and something has happened and they're trying to wake up. But I don't know of anything, besides mom deciding to go full mama bear and say, by the way, there's no more internet in the house. You turn off that internet. Well, either he's going to learn to pick up a book or he's probably going to leave the house for something. So if a mother came to me and said, "This is my son," I would say, "Turn off the internet in your house. Try that." And I bet you something would change. He'd probably get a driver's license. And because boredom, don't boredom, use boredom. That internet's just killing him.
But at the same time, I mean, there's clearly a lot of these young guys know that they're missing out on something within those particular areas, especially something like athleticism. I mean, how else could you explain somebody like the rise of like Andrew Tate, who's just, you look at the guy and it's like, why are people attracted? Why are young men attracted to this guy? Well, he's, former kickboxer and, he's buff and, he clearly speaks to that side of them that they know is just not engaged.
No, I agree. I agree 100%. And I think within them, there's something stirring, but you and I both know motivation within people is a really tricky thing. And if people will often do what is easy, and I think the internet is just so easy, and it's giving these substitutes for the real thing. So, yeah, I would tell mom, turn off that internet. Don't pay a smartphone bill, and to whatever degree I mean, I don't know how, because I know other parents have had difficulty, but you know, I always made my kids. There are exceptions, but generally speaking, you pay your way. You want a car? You know, maybe I own the car, but you're going to pay the insurance and then you're going to start paying me for the car. I mean, kids, they need a challenge. They need something out there. And nature provides that. It's just we're very wealthy. We're very affluent.
Yeah. Well, the other issue that I see a lot of times with these young men is, yeah, whatever parent around is they're fully engaged in whatever stressor in life that they're dealing with. They're just kind of checked out as a parent. So, you know, trying to get them involved in, you know, helping their child move forward is a very difficult task as a therapist.
Well, they land up with you because they want you to fix something. So I've often.
Oh yeah. I'm totally the dad substitute. I've seen this again and again over the years.
Well, and my wife's a school teacher and it's gotten worse. You know, parents are afraid of their children. They're afraid to say, I'm afraid my child won't like me.
Right. Right.
Okay. Exactly. Well, yeah. You're going to have to risk that. And they might not like you for a while, but you're the parent. You're not their friend. They can have lots of friends. They've only got one parent. You're going to have to learn to do this. And, you know, and again, Peterson sort of came on with this and there's still a reaction to him. Well, that's being mean. No, that's not being mean, because the truth is you help raise that child and they won't wind up in jail. If the first person that says no to a kid is a cop, you have not done your job. Yeah. That doesn't mean that every kid's going to wind up seeing a cop, but I mean that this is a systemic problem in our society right now, and it's getting worse.
Yeah, boundaries. It's all about boundaries. Yeah. Boundaries are being torn down in every sector of our society, from the families to the greater. To communities, cities, cultures, all boundaries have to be destroyed.
And it's driving my wife crazy, because what's going on in the schools now is that schools are taking away the very limited set of things that teachers have, little things that pinch a little. And when I mean pinch, I mean you're going to lose some of your recess. No, you can't do that. And it's like, and then then you talk to the parents. Okay, well, Why isn't Johnny doing better in school? Well, you know, does Johnny have any reason to do better in school? And it's the difficulty is that children are really going to suffer because of this. And if you start, I mean, Peterson's talked about this too. I mean, you start young when they're 3 and 4 and you start with very small things and they learn as they grow, and they're not all kids are the same. Some will be more rebellious, some less. It's a very complex thing, but you know, it's if you're having to deal with this stuff when your kid is 21, it's a lot harder than having had to deal with it productively when they were 3 to 6.
Yeah.
If you do that work well when they're 3 to 6, when they're 21, I mean, my children did not, but people always roll their eyes, talk about teenagers. And I don't want to be too judgy with respect to this because every kid is different, but we didn't have any problem with our kids when they were teenagers. And they, you know, they respected their parents. They feared their parents. They probably feared their mother more than their father in some ways. But I mean, this is what parenting has always been. And we as a culture have lost this, and we're going to pay for that loss. And the problem is that often lessons learned too late have to be learned harder than when they were small and they sat down for a little time out and they learned that, well, you know, if you maybe do this good thing, then you don't get the time out. Then you get these other good things and, you know, you get little stickers and stars. And one of our children was probably the most difficult of the group to motivate. And, you know, we homeschooled, so we had to deal with that because you had them the whole time. And, you know, we had stars and stickers and, you know, you had 5 stars for, you know, cleaning your room 5 nights in a row, and you learn a little Lego toy or a matchbox car, you know, something small. I mean, it's just, parents have been playing these tricks on kids forever, and nobody sat me down and taught them, but you figure it out and you watch the kid and you kind of know where it goes. And, but yeah, and they're 21 or 22 and they're trapped by, you know, video games, porn, and, you know, weed or alcohol. Yeah, you got a problem. And then usually it's probably going to be a 12-step program or, you know, something a lot tougher. Or jail. I mean, a lot of people in the city, well, you know this. Some go to jail and become lifers. Others go to jail and there's a shock, and maybe they find a street preacher or someone, and they turn around and, you know, they straighten out and they correct their life. It's,
yeah.
But there's no formula. You know, you'd love to give them a pill. There ain't no pill. So I don't know if that's been helpful at all. It's probably everything you already know.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we solved that issue, Paul.
Yeah. Glad we agreed that we have no solution for it besides everything that's always been. So
I did have another question for you. This is just like curiosity on my part, but are people like constantly, are your listeners constantly contacting you and asking you to convert to, I don't know, Orthodoxy, Catholicism or something? Because you seem to bring that up a lot whenever I turn on one of your videos, like, no, I'm not going to convert to, you know, whatever. It's like, is he getting hammered every day by people who are,
it's
like,
not,
oh,
constant.
You
need to... It's okay. It's regular. People can't figure out why I would, you know, but all of that's projection, you know, screens work on projection. And, you know, especially when my beard is long. People are, oh, he's already got the beard. Why isn't he Orthodox? It's like, well, and, you know, Muslims and some certain Jewish friends of mine are particularly persistent in these areas. But even though claiming not a proselytizing religion, but why do you still, those tribal games are, they're just normal. When a high-profile person aligns with whatever tribe you align with, it feels like a win in the universe and that your team is winning. So it's just,
okay.
But it's not a big deal. I mean, I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't have my own mind. And people's, you know, even though I probably am a little bit more transparent in terms of my life and a whole bunch of other areas of my life than, let's say, maybe Jonathan, there's whole ranges of my life that, if, you know, what's so funny is that I have a church here, and I mean, to meet me, I mean, if you want to have a Zoom call, that's kind of tough because there's maybe 4 or 5 slots that I have that can get filled a week. But if you want to meet me, just walk in at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning, and, you know, you can set up chairs, and, but that's, you got to be here then. And then it's suddenly a little demystified, you know, just a regular guy and normal people. And, you know, I might be a big deal on the internet, but here on Florin Road, I'm a rando. So it's good. It's good. I like it that way. When I think about what Jordan Peterson's been through, gosh, I wouldn't wish that on anyone. Can't go to the store. Can't, you know, whatever, because people are going to stop you, and that level of fame, that's got to suck.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't imagine. That's gotta be really difficult to just try to live your life without being in a fishbowl, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, did we check off any, you know, everything that you wanted to touch on, at least for today?
Yeah. I certainly went into everything that I wanted to go into. I mean, certainly if you have any more questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them. kind of disappointed that Jonathan Peugeot didn't become Roman Catholic. You know, it's just, it's like, man, come on.
He's still young. Maybe.
I don't know.
For Peugeot to go back.
The whole icon.
You should write him. Dear Jonathan, have you considered returning to the Catholic Church?
Maybe if I do it in French, he will.
There you go.
He will pay more attention. I don't know.
maybe it's Matthew you should work on, because he seems less committed to a body right now. So work on Matthew.
You know, I was following him on Twitter for a little while, and he's Matthew's kind of out there.
Yeah, he's out there. Oh, the world, people will like. I mean, it's good to hear you say you like your job, because people are interesting. The day you're a therapist or a pastor and you no longer find people interesting, you should definitely get a different line of work, because people are interesting. And once you get a chance to know them and sort of see the world through their eyes, you know, it's fascinating.
Yeah, it is. It's funny, when I first started listening to you, I just happened to get a client who was a pastor. And so, like, listening to you and also sort of just, you know, having him as a client, getting that like inside baseball sort of point of view in terms of being a pastor at a church, like what kind of pressure, you know, your average pastor is under, and just him trying to like deal with that stress. It was a pretty amazing experience just to have him as a client and just getting to hear all of that.
Yeah, as a Protestant pastor in America, it can become sort of a service industry. And it's you know, you'd have that to a degree as a therapist too. If your client doesn't like you, they won't, you know. But as a church, it's this big, it's or this 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 group of people, and they pay your salary, and there's a lot of things that can get involved. And it's not getting any easier, because when my grandfather and my father's day, the tradition sort of carries you, and as these traditions sort of evaporate. Yeah.
But it's I mean, I know he wasn't reformed, but he was part of some sort of organization, because they had his church had elders.
Yeah.
But like just the internal politics, like many of the elders didn't like him, but the larger congregation did like him. Oh, so you had like this tension that, you know, he's trying to deal with and he's trying to navigate. And it was just very, very political. It's like, wow.
Wow. Well, Aaron, it was good to meet you, cop turned therapist. I'll send you the recording, and then we can see what we want to do with it.
All right. Sounds good. It was great meeting you. You know, like I said, after, you know, listening to you all these years in the morning, to finally like meet you and have a little bit of a normal relationship, rather than being like, well, he doesn't even know I exist and I know all about his life. It just feels weird.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. That's what's fun for me about these conversations. I was just talking to someone right before I was talking to you. I mean, it's just talking into the camera isn't that much fun. It's much more fun when the camera talks back. So,
yeah.
All right, Aaron, take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.